Lucas Liffredi, 12-1124. And will you help me with the pronunciation of your name?
Sure, Judge Williams. That's Threlkeld.
Threlkeld. Threlkeld. Okay.
Just like it's spelled,
all right.
Amazingly. Thank you, Judge Williams. May it please the court, counsel. As just stated, I'm Brian Threlkeld with the Federal Public Defender's Office for the Central District of Illinois. I'm arguing on behalf of Robert Liffredi. The plain language of Guideline Section 2B1.1 in both the main part of the guidelines and the application notes states that a victim is a person who has sustained some actual loss. The guidelines define actual loss as pecuniary harm. That is harm that is measurable in money. The guidelines are also clear that actual loss should not encompass other harms that do not have directly economic dimension, such as emotional distress. The ruling this court made in Panis, and I'm not certain if that's how it's pronounced, Panis, that a victim includes anyone who is subject to even momentary loss is contrary to this plain language. Panis implies that a person was harmed, so to speak, even if the entire potential loss was promptly reimbursed, even if the person was never aware that the money was gone before it was put back, and even if the person was unaware of any harm during the course of the crime at all. And even if that person is now in no measurable way worse off than if the crime had ever happened. So the language of the guidelines simply does not provide counting such a person as a victim. This is getting into territory, I suppose, that we may call moral accident, where we're saying that the persons who were the target of the fraud suffered no harm, not because of any mitigating act by the defendant, but because of simply the circumstances of the case. But again, the guidelines themselves call for a finding that there was actual harm to anyone who is counted as a victim. Now, this isn't unknown to the law. Let's say in the case of murder and attempted murder, the penalties for attempted murder are less than they are for murder, even though we can say the offender in both cases, there was no moral difference in that person's intent. But
well, I'm not sure the analogy holds up because your argument is basically that restitution, the act of restitution after the charge is brought, somehow erases the victim status of the victims for purposes of the application of the multiple victim guidelines enhancement. And I'm not sure that's a sound argument because that really hinges on a fortuity, that there's some solvent entity that the defendant controls that can make that restitution. And those victims are still very real victims. I mean, their money was stolen, right? And the fact that reimbursement was made by, as I understand it, a parent corporation for the most part, and then your client reimbursed two of the victims out of his own pocket, apparently, is the way this went. It doesn't mean that it doesn't erase the crime. In other words, they still have the status of victims, and you're arguing essentially that they don't.
I agree it doesn't erase the crime, but under the plain language of the guidelines, they are not to be counted as victims. They did not suffer the actual loss. If, for example, before they had been reimbursed, there was evidence that they were actually harmed in some way, that, for example, they had wanted to make some use of their money and had been unable to because of the fraud, then there's no question that under the guidelines they would be counted as victims. But you know, an example would be, let's suppose last night somebody with fraudulent intent emptied my bank account at midnight, and you know, the bank saw that there was something wrong and put money back in at 2 a.m. Now, you know, I wasn't trying to make any payment on anything. I wasn't trying to get access to my money. I'd say in the morning when I found out about it, I'd be mad as hell about it. But under the guidelines, I wouldn't be able to say that I was a victim because I had not suffered any harm as outlined in the guidelines as a result of my of the perpetrator of the fraud's acts. I'm not going to belabor this further. Of course, if the court has any questions, I'm happy to answer those. I did want to address the standard of review. The government has said that this court should review this claim under plain error review. About a month before sentencing, it was over a year before sentencing, Mr. Loffredi filed objections to the PSR. He objected to the application of that two-level enhancement under Section 2B1.1B2A1 on probation's finding that he had defrauded 14 brokerage customers. And he argued in that filing with the court that there was only one victim, LPL, that had a fiduciary duty to the 14 customers, obliging it to compensate them fully, and it did so. So he made this argument. Now, in the face of this, the government is essentially asserting that a defendant can't preserve an issue for review by filing an objection that is tantamount to stating, I preserve the issue for review. That simply can't be right. And in fact, in pages 3 and 4 of his filing, that's a document number 51 in the Record on Appeal, pages 2 and 3, I believe he said that he understood that the law of the circuit was against him, but he was preserving it for appeal. So this is a preserved challenge to the interpretations of the guideline and is subject to de novo review.
Do you want to save the rest of your time for rebuttal?
Yes. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Thelkel. Mr. Kohler.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Counsel just mentioned that example of his bank account being cleaned out at midnight, and at 2 a.m. the bank replaced the money. Under Panisse, and under just a common sense understanding of being a victim, that money was stolen. That money was gone. He was a victim under that circumstance. The case here today, though, is not that case where there was a loss and an immediate reimbursement. The defendant in this particular case, over the course of 4 years, approached 14 of his brokerage customers, engaged them directly, had them order what they thought were safe mutual funds or certificates of deposit, gave him the money to purchase those certificates of deposit, mutual funds, and other safe investments, and then he misappropriated it. Misappropriated it almost on the spot. So for an extended period of time, in some cases a period of years, those individuals, those brokerage clients, were victims. They, under Panisse and under any other understanding of what a victim is and suffering part of any actual loss, from the moment they gave Mr. Loffredi their money and he misappropriated it, they were victims.
And they were filing taxes based on the statements that he provided them. But in terms of tax returns and the information they were providing to the IRS.
As part of his scheme, Judge, he did provide them with phony tax documents and also, on a regular basis, phony account statements. So for years, he was lying to these particular individuals. So from the standpoint of this particular case, the district court properly applied that enhancement for more than 10 victim offense in this particular case in calculating the defendant's guideline sentencing range. This makes perfect sense under the current guideline regime. The definition of victim, as Panisse has said and as the First Circuit has said, has no temporal component to it, and it doesn't say anywhere, has no requirement that the loss be permanent. So in this particular case, when after the fact, after the four-year scheme was discovered, at some point after that, 12 of these customers were reimbursed by the broker-dealer that was, as the court has suggested, the parent over Loffredi's firm, which was Raymond Financial, Inc. Under Panisse, those individuals were victims from the moment they gave Loffredi their money until the moment that they received the reimbursement. Clearly, there are 12 people right there, and that would make this enhancement properly applied.
The definition of victim that we're concerned with here in the guidelines is keyed to any person who sustained any part of the actual loss as calculated under the loss calculation part of the guideline. And that loss calculation obviously is made without regard to amounts reimbursed. I mean, that reimbursement may come into play in calculating a restitution award, but the loss calculation doesn't offset restitution made.
You're absolutely right, Your Honor. It doesn't. And let me just, so that in full disclosure, you had mentioned earlier when counsel was here the two individuals who were paid during the course of the scheme by the defendant. Now, part of the allegations in this particular case was that it was a Ponzi-type scheme as well. There could be an argument made, Judge, that the fact that the defendant made those payments during the course of his scheme may not be part of the loss calculation. The 12, however, that were reimbursed by Linsco, his parent company, clearly, Judge, those were part of the loss calculation, as was advanced sales, which was the family business, where there's no contention at all on appeal that they were not a victim. Well, simply put, Your Honors, Judge Guzman, in sentencing Defendant Loffredi, took into account the fact that he victimized 15 people in this particular scheme, certainly more than 10 individuals, and he sentenced Mr. Loffredi accordingly. We would ask you to affirm the sentence.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Thelkell, how much? 2 minutes.
Thank you, Judge Williams. The critical distinction here is between the existence of a crime and the counting of victims. There's no question here that there was a crime. That's not being challenged at all. question is, what constitutes victims under the guidelines? The government has reiterated Panis's observation that the guidelines have no temporal, that this guideline has no temporal component. It does, however, have a harm component. And again, our point is that the victims had to have suffered pecuniary harm, economic harm that can be counted. The government speculates on this harm, and if you look at page 14 of the government's brief, it essentially acknowledges that the potential evidence of harm to these 14 victims hasn't been developed. Now, if it could be shown that, in fact, they incurred actual harm that was before the loss was cured by reimbursement, either by LPL or Mr. Loffredi, then it would be appropriate to count them as victims. But again, whether that happened is speculation at this point with the evidence that's in the record. This court, we urge to reconsider its holding in Panis and remand this case to the district court for resentencing, directing the district court not to apply the two-level enhancement for 10 or more victims unless the government can show that those individuals' losses were more than paper and theoretical losses, that they were for those individuals' losses that constituted actual harm rather than just potential harm.
All right. Thank you. Thank you to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.